Thank you very much, and welcome to everyone to our 18th February GNSO Council meeting. A special welcome to those calling in the middle of the night. There are quite a few of you. I appreciate you doing that. And we do have an important and full agenda, so thank you very much for doing that. I want to start off by, in case anybody hasn't noticed, there are several things that have been very last minute in this meeting and mostly beyond our control. So I do ask for your patience and try to smile in spite of the fact that things have been handled less than ideally for this. Anybody needs explanations on that, I'd be happy to provide that. As I said, we do have a full agenda, and so we're going to need to move expeditiously through it. Let's start off with the roll call.
Certainly, Chuck. We have on the call today Chuck Gomes, Caroline Greer, Adrian Kindris, Tim Ruiz, Stefan van Gelder. Has Edmund Chun perhaps joined us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you, Edmund. Zahid Jamil, Mike Rodenbach, Christina Rosette, David Taylor, Wolfur Lisnoben, Jamie Wagner, Rafik Damak, William Drake, Deborah Hughes, Wendy Seltzer, Rosemary St. Clair. Has Mary Wong joined us? Olga Cavelli, Andrei Koleshnikov, Alan Greenberg, Hanchuan Li, and we have apologies from Terry Davis, who cannot be on the call. And for staff, we have Denise Michel, Rob Hogarth, Margie Milam, Marika Koenigs, Julie Headland, Liz Gaster, and Glenda Sangerie. And we have David Olive, who will be joining us a little later. Thank you, Chuck. Have I left anybody off?
I'm not hearing speak up, so it sounds like you covered that well, Glenn. Thank you very much. Does anyone have a statement of interest to update? Hearing no one, we'll move on from there. Note with regard to the agenda that there are a few details, especially in item 4, and also on item 4 is the AOC review team issue. And then on item 5, the Nairobi meeting planning, there's probably a few details that will change. So just to alert you to that, are there any other comments on the agenda? Okay. You can see the status of the minutes. They were of our last meeting on the 28th of January. Were approved on the 10th of February. We won't spend any time on that. And let's move on to item 2 then, the vertical integration policy development process. There is a reference there to the motion that was passed, and I want to express special thanks to the drafting team volunteers. They are listed there. I won't name them all. Did I miss anyone, or did we miss anyone on that has been a part of that drafting team? If so, please let us know. We want to say thanks to all of you for all the work that you're doing in that regard.
Charles, this is Stefan.
Yes, Stefan.
Yeah, hi, everyone. Just to apologize for not sending in a report on what the team has been doing. I didn't have time to do that. Just maybe to tell the council that the agenda that we're currently working on is to try and have a final charter to the council by the end of next week.
Okay, so the by the
that would be by
26th. Is that right?
Let me just check. Yes.
Okay.
thank you, Stefan, and also thanks for. I didn't really expect a report from you because I know that the work is live, and I know that you had a meeting yesterday, and that everybody's working really hard. But thanks for the target date. And you'll notice on the under next steps on the agenda that we had set, the deadline is March 1st for consideration without exception, without having to do an exception, for the charter for action on the 10th of March. So the 26th would be just fine in that regard. Margie is the staff support person. Margie, do you have anything to add to Stefan's comments?
No, I think Stefan covered it. We've got a couple open items on the charter, but hopefully we should be able to wrap those up in the next couple of days. So I think that that timeline that Stefan indicated should work.
Yeah, and I've been very impressed with the amount of work that is going on. That list has had just tons of exchanges. So thanks again, everybody, for all the contributions in that regard. Does anybody have any questions or comments with regard to the vertical integration PDP? Okay. Moving on then to the item 3, prioritization of GNSO work. Olga, can you give us a brief update on where that's at?
Sure, Chuck. Thank you. We are meeting every week. Drafting team is trying to finalize the work we have been doing. We have been trying several different methodologies, different models, three dimensions, two dimensions, one dimension. We have gone through many different options in order to avoid council going through them once the model is presented to the council. And so hopefully we will show the council some outcomes during a face-to-face meeting in Nairobi.
Thank you, Olga. I'm sure, and I know, in fact, that this is taking a lot longer than any of us wanted or planned. I can say that the group is working hard. I think we went in a direction maybe that we ended up backing off of because we found out that it wouldn't produce what we really wanted, and that caused some delays. But certainly I've encouraged Olga and the team to try and wrap this up so we can get that done. Yes, thanks, Olga. Did you want to say anything else?
No, I just wanted to explain that we have been going through different options, and so we know which is the best to show and offer as an option to the council. This is why we may have taken more time than what we expected. We have been working really very hard, meeting every week since Seoul, so it's, we hope to finish by Nairobi.
Thank you. And one of the issues with regard why we even need to do prioritization is the availability of resources, both from the community and from staff. And I've asked Liz to share some info in that regard.
Thanks so much. And I agree with the comments that the group is working very hard and that it's become more complex, and there's a lot of great effort going into that. But I did want the opportunity to just briefly say that it has been a challenge, I know, for the community and for staff to keep up with all this work. All the staff to accommodate the additional workload, but load has continued to increase dramatically. We are concerned about both community resources and staff resources. We've had some meetings recently that we've had to cancel because there just was insufficient community participation to even hold the calls. And, of course, we don't know that until the call is actually convened. So there's a lot of staff time involved in just setting up the calls and then canceling the calls, which is unfortunate. And, of course, we took on the vertical integration PDP. It was a high priority, clearly, for the council to do so. But it does illustrate some of the particular challenges of a complex PDP just in terms of the numbers of questions that are being and requests that are being directed to staff and to general counsel's office. we're trying to accommodate those responses and get the work done. But I just would like the council and the community to appreciate that it's just very difficult for us to respond on an accelerated basis given the workload and also the workload on other departments, including the general counsel's office. I had talked to the chairs quickly about maybe some things we might be able to do on a temporary basis to ease the challenges a little bit, and you know, these are just suggestions for discussion. If you hate any of these ideas, forget I mentioned them. But you know, and it's very much, although I'm focused on staff resource, I really recognize that the community is stretched very thin too, that you know, certainly staff is paid to do this support. There's just only so much, you know, with bandwidth that we could do. So some of the things that I thought perhaps we could talk about probably on another call or in Nairobi would be whether there is work areas that we could perhaps slow down or reconsider or perhaps temporarily delay that might free both staff and community up to be most responsive to the questions and work teams and PGPs that are most important to you. Another option might be to try to encourage group members to do a little more in the way of writing assignments on areas of particular concern to those members. I want to recognize when I make that suggestion that I understand how stretched the community is too, and you know, staff is delighted to do as much of this as we can, but we're just in a particular situation now with these 20-some work groups that it's just been very demanding. So, you know, to the degree we can encourage that, it would be very helpful. Another thought is to try to wind down some of the GNSO improvements work that may subside, you know, not the things that we know that there are efforts where, you know, like the PDP group where community consultation is active and needed. And but if there are ways where we could kind of keep up progress while still, you know, moving some of these issues to an implementation phase, it might be easier to not convene so many work groups. So something else to consider. We should certainly, I think, urge every group to adopt a regular call or meeting schedule to try to reduce the doodle, constant doodle challenges with scheduling groups on an ad hoc basis is another thought. We could consider a temporary delay in forming any new working groups or requests for issues reports beyond what we're doing now. And just keep in mind that when there are requests for staff related to PDPs or drafting or research or questions to the general counsel, we're going to try to respond to these as quickly as possible, but there are limits in what we can ask internally, especially with Nairobi meeting coming up and such. So that's hopefully constructive. I certainly mean it to be, and just appreciate everyone's understanding that we're kind of at an all-time high in terms of workload and stretched very, very thin as staff. Thank you. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Liz. Adrian.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes, you sound good.
Yeah, so I hope I can be constructive in my next comments, but I have a couple to make, and the first one is in relation to what Liz has just said, and I should also say I do acknowledge, having been on the work prioritization team, how much work is going into, how regular the meetings are and how long the emails are, for that group. But my concern is when I hear overextension of GNSO resources and staff, what I think of is budget also. And I think that that's one item with respect to staff that often gets forgotten. So whilst the staff are being overextended, I imagine that that is also a function of the budget that is allowed for each particular project. So I imagine, for example, that there was a budget assigned to the work prioritisation group to how much they were, for the policy staff, how much they were prepared to spend on working on that group. And then I imagine with all the tasks that are within the work prioritisation team that the staff has a budget set aside for and that is being valued within the prioritisation scope. Liz, do you care to comment to that?
This is Denise. I can comment.
That would be great. Thanks, Denise.
The answer is no. We don't have budgets assigned to every working group and PDP. We have We have the staff allocation that we received at the beginning of the fiscal year, and we've discussed on the list and on the council the sort of total budget that was set aside for GNSO implementation. Almost all of that goes to professional services, contracting services, Ken Bauer, to do the work of many working groups and website development people for the new GNSO website, those types of things. But we do not allocate resources for every group that is created or task that's created within the GNSO. Even if we did have extra funds right now to, say, hire consultants, as you can, I think, appreciate, just getting someone to speed on the GNSO, its structure, processes, and the substantive policy issues we're dealing with, it takes quite a bit of staff time to oversee consultants to get them to the point where they can staff GNSO working groups. And so we don't have, you know, a lot of flexibility in instantaneously adding consultants when working groups exceed the exceed our ability to support them. Does that answer your question, Adrian? Yeah, so I think
Sorry, go ahead. Excuse me.
So in terms of the budget issue, I think really starting this week and going forward through until June, the GNSO does have an ability to provide guidance and input on the overall ICAM budget and think about what its workload is expected to be in the next fiscal year and what type of resources might be needed to support this effort. So clearly resources are a factor in the overall ability of staff to support an increased workload in the GNSO.
Yeah, so,
Adrian, do you follow up?
Yeah, thanks, Denise. I appreciate that, absolutely. And from my point of view, if you don't have extra resources to clip on, which clearly you've pointed out isn't easy to do, and I think all of us in the industry suffer the same thing when we're trying to get staff,
right.
It then says, well, how much time can they spend in order to get things done? And so I guess the point I'm bringing up is just to make sure that the work prioritization team include value is in a direct financial sense. As one of the parameters with which work is being prioritized. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and Chuck and Liz and others can speak to the extensive detail the work prioritization group has gone into in factoring in all of those elements. And there tends to be a focus, and understandably so, on staff resources to support the GNSO's work, but you're really past the critical point of the GNSO community itself being able to support its work. We're constantly canceling working group calls because people don't show up. And on a almost daily basis, the community members who are participating in the working groups of them teams, et cetera, aren't doing the assignments that they volunteered for, presumably because everyone is stretched so thin. We keep talking about the fact that the GNSO has taken on more work than the community can do. And we're really past that point now. There are so many open action items that the community is unable to handle it. So staff resources is certainly one component, but I think it's important for the council to recognize that at this very point in time, you have way more work than you can actually do as a community. Even if we had all the resources necessary to staff these working groups, the community cannot do all of this work. And so, I think part of the point Liz is trying to make with all of you is unless you really acknowledge that and say, understanding we're in a crunch right now, here are the five things that we're going to put on hold. If you don't go through that decision-making process, then de facto, it's going to be made for you with people just, not showing up for working groups and sort of following their own interests in doing work here and there as they see fit. It would probably be more, efficient and effective for the council to collectively acknowledge the point it's in and make a substantive decision.
I'm going to need to, we're going to need to wrap this agenda item up. There are two people, or now there's several more people in the queue. I'm going to have to ask each of you to be very brief in your comments. We lost whatever time we gained on the quickness of the previous agenda item, so we're running out of time. I do want to call people's attention to the budget and operational plan framework that was posted for public comment. I had a chance to look at that last night, and you can see quite a bit of detail in terms of where the policy staff and actually a lot of increases of expenses have gone into that. But take a look at that for yourself and comment on that as you can. Mike.
Thanks, Chuck. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Denise, the prioritization work is going on. I do think everybody on the council realizes what you're saying about, at least about community resources and particularly about council resources. But, you know, my view is that staff needs to keep up regardless, you know. And so the question really is staff doing anything to hire more people at this point in time?
Well, Mike, in reference to that budget framework, I do suggest you look at that. One of the things that's happened this year is that expenditures exceeded what was budgeted, and the board has already taken action to make up for some of that. But it's not as simple of adding more funds unless you take them away from other things. But we don't have time to talk about that here. Stefan.
Thanks, Chuck. Just one point on this topic, further to Mike's question. It's one thing to say staff needs to keep up. Don't forget that the volunteers also need to keep up. And I think we're all finding, all of us who are involved in this work on a regular basis, that it's extremely hard at the moment to balance that pro bono work, as it were, that we're doing for ICANN with our regular day-to-day activities. So I really urge us to think about that as well, because otherwise we'll find ourselves in the same situation that staff is lamenting today. Chuck, I just wanted to ask you also, do you want me to be timekeeper for this meeting?
Sure. Like I said the other day, yes, please.
Okay.
Good point, Stefan. And Mike, I don't think you were asking that the existing staff just work around the clock, whatever it takes. But you were suggesting, you know, adding staff if possible to help with that. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, I want to be very clear on that too. I mean, I really appreciate the very, very hard work that, you know, especially the three policy staffers that I deal with the most. It's very obvious they work very hard. No, I'm not asking for more work from them. I'm asking for more staff to help.
Thank you. And Jamie, you're the last one on this topic, and if you can keep it to about a minute, we'll be, I think, just about on target.
Okay, thank you. I would like to add that I think also that resources that are scarce are much more on the volunteer side than on the staff side. But I would like to add also that our work, I'm convinced that the exercise on prioritization is the most important guidance council can give both to staff and to the community. And I think also that the work that is being done in the group, I'm participating in it, and it will help council to have an objective discussion and a regular discussion on this matter. We are proposing to do such an exercise in a first basis every meeting, every ICANN meeting. So I think we will have good input to give to the council in Nairobi. That's all.
Thank you, Jamie, and thank you for your contributions to that effort, as well as the others that are on that drafting team. Now let's go to item 4 on the agenda, the proposal for GNSO endorsement of Affirmation of Commitments Review Team volunteers. Now let me start off by apologizing for the very, very fluid nature of this issue, and to also thank Bill and the drafting team for their extreme patience and lots of hard work to pull this together. So let me start off with that, and let me also suggest I would appreciate it if we, and I probably don't even have to ask this, but I would appreciate it if we don't spend a lot of time complaining about how this has all come together, because there are lots of problems with that. And as you've seen, Krista Spain and Cheryl Langdon Orr and I sent a letter in that regard to the selectors in this process. But if we can put that aside and try to constructively deal with the issues before us, that'll be very helpful today. There is a reference to the draft proposal and for affirmation of commitments review teams that I can post it for public comment. There is also a reference to the proposed procedures from the drafting team with regard to this. Let me, before I turn it over to Bill, to do a quick overview. Glenn are the and Marika are the latest documents posted on both the wiki and the Adobe Connect site?
Yes, the latest document that I received last night from Bill has been posted, and the document that Rosemary sent just before the meeting has not been posted, but has been sent to the council list.
And are we talking about the same documents, or did
no,
did,
you're not.
Okay, so Bill added an edit to the to Rosemary's document, I believe. So that may not be posted. So bear with us, everyone, please. Bill will try and keep us straight in terms of where we're at. Also, there's some changes that we'll talk about to the motions that are needed. Let me, before I turn it over to Bill, let everyone know, in case you didn't see my forwarded message today, maybe several of them, that there will be another extension granted. It looks now like that won't be announced until tomorrow after Marco is able to coordinate with Cheryl and Chris and the other SO and AC chairs with regard to some of the final dates. But we can assume for this meeting today that the deadline for applications will be extended at least until the 7th of March. It may be a few days beyond that, and I'll talk more about that later. Let me now turn it over to Bill, and have fun, Bill.
Yeah, gee, thanks a lot, Chuck. Are you sure we can't complain a little bit about the process? The first point is, Glenn, what we were referring to were the documents pertaining to this item, not the one that about the GAC meeting. That's what you were referring to. So there were recent versions of the draft action plan and the process document and the motion all sent to the list by Chuck and, I believe, who was it? Who sent that one?
Caroline,
right. So, but we'll sort this out as we go. People may have to hold on until they see the final thing. Bottom line here, of course, the first point, obviously, is that the goalposts have been changing from the start, which has made this whole process very complicated. We've ended up doing a lot of work based on certain sets of assumptions and then having to go back and recalibrate and then recalibrate again. And now you're seeing that with this second extension of the deadline, that all of the documents are being thrown out onto the list just prior to the meeting, and you're probably quite unsure as to what the status of any of those are. So we'll come back to the timeline, I guess, in a moment. But I think what we should do probably first is talk about the substance of the plan we put forward, which is the subject of the motion, and then circle back to the timeline stuff. So the proposed process for GNSO endorsement, that's the document you should look at, and I hope that the newest version is up on the web, has several components. There's one part that has to do with the process by which the council will select its nominees to go to Giannis and Peter for their consideration as the selectors, and then the other part has to do with the additional qualifications that the council wanted to add on top of the qualifications that ICANN had specified. So just to go through those quickly, the first point on the process, if you're looking at the document, what we decided on at the end after a lot of back and forth was that we would nominate up to six names to give to Peter and Giannis. We don't know how many they're going to select, which of course makes this difficult. But we're assuming that they'll pick at least two. We hope, because we did file in the public comments a suggestion that the original notion of very small groups be expanded, and others have done the same. And Giannis gave some indication that he was thinking along those lines. So hopefully there will be two GNSO people on the first review team on accountability and transparency. For that six, then, the idea was that we would give each stakeholder group a pre-allocated slot. So each stakeholder group can put forward a name that will definitely be included in the pool that would go to the selectors. Then there would be two additional nominees that could be selected by a simple majority vote of each house. One slot would be open to applicants of any kind, and the other slot would be reserved for candidates who do not self-identify with any particular stakeholder group, including NomCom appointees. And we'll come back to that in a second. An evaluation team, which we've mentioned on the list, this is Chuck's suggestion, comprising one counselor from each stakeholder group plus one NomCom appointee, would assess those applications and sort of provide an assessment to the council to help them in that voting process. So four slots that are kind of pre-allocated for each stakeholder group to decide, and then two additional slots, essentially. Now, of course, if the pool is smaller, then, of course, we don't put forward six.
Bill, let me interrupt you a second. Tim, do you have a question about something that that Bill just said?
Yeah, I guess I've kind of expressed this concern before, but, you know, it said that, you know, the one slot for non-com appointees, I guess what that implies is that, and I guess I can see that no reason why not, I suppose, that a counselor could actually apply. What my concern about that is that, you know, can we check to make sure that a counselor would be seriously considered and that they wouldn't sort of be eliminated offhand just based on the fact that it'd be viewed as if they don't have enough time?
Just one clarification first, and then I'll let Bill respond. Make sure everybody understands, and I think Tim does, but that sixth slot that Bill talked about that's open to anyone except those associated with NSG isn't just for NomCom appointees. It's for anybody that's not associated with a NSG. Bill, I'll let you take it from there.
Precisely right. Obviously, we couldn't create a slot that has parity with stakeholder slots that would effectively be open to only three people. So that wasn't the intention. The intention was to create a broader pool within which, if somebody from a NomCom space wanted to apply, they would be able to. So the broader pool is anybody who doesn't self-identify or whom we're unable to identify as being connected to the stakeholder group, they would go into that pool. So you could have, for example...
I understand that. That's not really my question. My question is that by mentioning the non-com appointees, to me that implies that counselor applications would be considered to be endorsed by the council. My concern is that we make sure that the selectors will give serious consideration to them so we don't waste a slot, because they're going to say, just in case they say, well, they're already on the council, they're too busy, they're not going to have time for this, so they give it a look.
Okay, well, yeah, there are two different issues getting mixed. One is the nature of that slot, and then the second is counselors and whether they should be able to stand. And on the second, we did, of course, go back and forth on this a lot. And I think there was a view among some people that counselors should not be able to stand. Others felt that they should. And that if at the end of the day people don't think that they would be the right person for the position, they won't vote for them. And if they were to vote for them, or if they were to come into some other act of God or whatever, still, at the end of the day, Giannis and Peter will make the decision. And if we're giving them six names and they're only picking two, I wouldn't think that, you know, we're necessarily, you know, engaging in some kind of really risky business in the eventuality that one was mixed in there. So personally, we didn't get to a final resolution of this issue. I had thought maybe some of you were going to submit an amendment along those lines, and that didn't happen. And so the language about counselors that some had suggested was not included. We can return to this issue if you want. I wanted to just watch first how it works.
I think our endorsement team or whatever should just consider
Thanks, Tim. Bill, there's one more person in that wants a comment. I'm going to ask then that we let Bill go through his entire overview of the process, and we'll deal with all questions at that time just for time efficiency. But, Christina, you've got your hand up, so let me call on you, and then we'll let Bill continue.
I'll hold my question to the end.
Thanks, Christina. It's all yours, Bill.
Alrighty. So anyway, so there are these two slots. Now, we debated the possible ambiguities about how these might be interpreted, what does the open slot mean, and so on. We ended up adding just the other day, as people on the list will have seen, some language to try to specify how we would handle the allocation, suggesting that, first of all, applicants could self-identify, and then if they don't or if we have questions about their self-identification, there are certain steps we'd go through to make sure that they were put into the right pool. Now, there's one remaining ambiguity in my mind about this, because while we have one slot that's reserved for people who are unaffiliated, which could be, you know, law school professors who are experts on ICANN, who are not part of a stakeholder group, or could be an NCA, could be whatever, we also have this other category, which my thought was, well, if we put all of the unaffiliated into one box, that means the other box is de facto essentially for the stakeholder groups to select. One stakeholder group would end up getting two selected through a majority vote if that happened.
Bill, it could also be someone that's unaffiliated as well.
Yes, but my point has been, and I've asked this several times in the drafting team, if we're allocating all the affiliated people to the reserved slot, how would an unaffiliated person be going into that slot? So that's an issue that we can resolve later, I suppose. That's an internal procedural issue. Perhaps the evaluation team can figure this out. There are other issues as well. How many stakeholder group nominees would we allow for the open slot? Chuck, in his message to the stakeholder group chairs, it suggested perhaps up to two. That would mean potentially you have up to eight candidates for that slot, which then, of course, raises all kinds of questions. Is that too many in terms of a coordinated vote, et cetera? On the other hand, we may not have such a big pool, so we don't know. But we do have to decide how many people we want a stakeholder group to be able to nominate for that open slot. And a last question on that is whether there should be some parity between the number of people standing for each of those two slots, a point that I've raised, and I think we didn't kind of resolve it. But anyway, so moving on from that just for now. Then there were two provisions pertaining to diversity. Some folks were skittish about hardwiring in diversity too much. Others of us feel like it's really important for ICANN, particularly in the context of the Accountability Transparency Review. I think the compromise language we have is reasonably flexible. I hope people feel that way. We say unless the applicant pool does not allow, no more than two nominees should come from the same geographic region, not shall, should. And unless the applicant pool does not allow, nominees must not all be of the same gender, and the distribution between genders should be no greater than two-thirds to one-third. So, in other words, hopefully what you would get is not a situation where we have five men and one woman or five North Americans or something like that, but where we would get a reasonable mix of people through the stakeholder groups' allocations of their individual slots and then those two voted slots. Now, if those diversity goals were not achieved in the initial round of selections, we added a provision saying that the evaluation team would consult with the stakeholder groups and non-council appointees to review the candidate pool and then present to council an alternative mix that would meet the goals. and the council could vote on the new list with a simple majority, both houses required for acceptance. If somehow everybody wanted to be difficult and weren't able to make that work, then we'd vote again. And I was hoping that that would be sufficiently deterrent and that nobody would want to go through all that, especially with a deadline looming, that we would all just be reasonable and find a proper mix, if needed, through consultation. So that's the hope. And then lastly, the last point, and then I'll stop, with regard to those two slots, they're not pre-allocated to stakeholder groups. There's language about what would you do in the case of a tie, simple majority. Chuck wrote this, and it would be, the tie would be broken based first on geographical or gender diversity, and secondly, then, the total votes received. Why don't I stop there, and before going to the additional requirements for candidates, see if there's any discussion about the process as we tried to define.
Thanks, Bill. And, Christina, I'll let you be first. Is there anybody else that would like to be in the queue, and you can either raise your hand in Adobe or just let me know verbally?
It's Olga.
I heard Olga. Was there someone else?
Yeah, Mike.
Mike, okay. Go ahead, Christina.
Before I ask my question, Bill, it may be helpful for those not on the drafting team if you went over what the process was that we had discussed on the list about potentially allocating purportedly unaffiliated volunteers.
Okay, sure. Happy to do that. Caroline put that language into the action plan, I believe. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Caroline, where did you stick that language?
Yes,
here it is.
In the action plan.
Yeah, because we thought it shouldn't go into the – this other document will be something that will be seen by all candidates. They don't need to know all the details of the internal decision-making process. So, first of all, we ask them in the candidates to self-identify if they have a stakeholder group or constituency with which they feel most closely affiliated. Some people have multiple kinds of connections. If a volunteer is unclear about or chooses not to identify his or her affiliation, the council will then follow the following procedure. First, if there's council knowledge of the person having membership in a stakeholder group or constituency, we assume association with that stakeholder group or constituency and allocate them to that slot for the open competition, the open election slot. If there's council knowledge of membership in ALAC, we assume that they are associated with ALAC, and we have to define how we do this, but we have to talk to ALAC and say, basically, look, this is an ALAC person, not tied in any way to the council. Would you consider them for your process? And if there's no known membership in ALAC or a stakeholder group or constituency, we assume they're unaffiliated. And my assumption was that in assuming that they're unaffiliated, we therefore put them into the slot that is reserved for the unaffiliated. That's why I have issues with the way some people are describing the other slot. But anyway, so that is basically the procedure, and the hope was therefore that we would end up at the end of the day with kind of like defined pools of candidates subject to the House votes. Now, what aspect of your question, Christina, am I not responding to?
No. I mean, I have questions about timing in terms of how we're going to actually go about doing all this, but I'll hold those for now.
Yeah.
I just want to support Tim's comment, and I think, frankly, it might be better to more broadly have Chuck and Cheryl and Chris reach out to Peter and Giannis to confirm or to find out, is there going to be any per se prohibition on membership of a review team of nominees that are in the leadership position of the two supporting organizations, you know, the CCNSO Council, GNSO Council, or, and I confess that I don't know what the ALAC equivalent is called, but I do think it makes sense to find that out on the front end. And just also note that I had been one of the folks who had raised concerns about possibly unduly restricting the nominee pool by hardwiring diversity requirements, particularly since it's entirely possible that the slate we present to Giannis and Peter could be fully diverse, and by virtue of them picking from various slates put forward, that would really make no difference in the end. And also, as to the concern, more from a potential conflict of interest perspective of having counselors serve on the review teams. We decided not to put an amendment in, but we still do have those concerns. If we're interested in moving this forward, we're not going to try and raise an amendment at this point.
Thank you, Christina.
Christina, can I?
Go ahead, Bill.
I'm sorry. Can I just ask Christina? Can you clarify? Tim, we went around this before, but we just did it again. Tim raised a question about counselors in general, and you raised a question about counselors in leadership positions. Which one is it that you guys wish Chuck to ask Giannis and Peter about?
I should have been clear. I meant leadership within the particular supporting organization. So from that perspective, I mean counselors, whether it's a GNSO counselor,
any counselor. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
I will ask that.
Yeah.
I think I know the answer. I think it will be there are no restrictions at this time. Now we all know that because the selectors make the decision, they could later, choose someone who's not real busy over someone who's not. But I will ask the question. And now what I'd like to do, we have at least three people. It looks like four more in queue. If you could keep your comments or questions to a minute or less, we're quickly running out of time, and we have a motion to act on that we have to do today. So be as brief as possible, please. Olga, you're next.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. Just one brief comment about that. I think diversity, geographical diversity, and gender diversity is very important for this review team. And I want to ask a question. Are the candidates suggested by stakeholder groups go to a voting procedure, or just are there? And NCAs and other candidates must go through a voting procedure. I think that's a big difference in between the two. That's the question I want to ask you, Bill.
Go ahead, Bill.
Okay. Stakeholder groups, each of the four stakeholder groups gets one position pre-allocated to them. Then there are two other slots, Olga, both of which shall be competitive votes, one of which is reserved for people who are not affiliated with the stakeholder group. The other is defined as open, but I think effectively that means it's a competitive slot for stakeholder groups. And yes, there is a difference then between the conditions applying to the two, because the stakeholder groups, being large bodies representing lots of people, they get a pre-allocated slot. Others are doing an open competition. It's hard to see how we would sell people on any other process.
So the council, Olga, will not be acting on the stakeholder group nominees or endorsements.
Right.
Okay?
That was my question. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, we're only dealing with the two.
Mike.
Thanks. First of all, I don't have any power at my house. I'm running out of phone battery, so I may get disconnected before the vote. So I might just give you my vote after I hear the answer to this question, if you don't mind, Chuck. I'm puzzled about the gender diversity requirement. And, you know, I'm a lefty politically, but I really don't see what the relationship is between gender and this situation. I'm wondering if you could explain that a bit, explain whether you also discussed, you know, racial diversity, religious diversity, diversity of sexual orientation. How did you come to gender diversity alone?
Mike, that was straight from the AOC requirements that the selectors will have to use. That is not something we initiated. Our concern was that because the selectors have that requirement that they're required to follow, if we don't take it into consideration, we may eliminate some possibilities there.
So that came from the board then, or the committee of the board?
The proposal that's on the table, that's where it came from. I think it may have been from the staff proposal. I can't remember whether it was exactly in the affirmation. I think it was in the staff proposal.
It's in both.
And Mike, in case you do drop off, are you okay with the plan that's on the table?
I'm going to abstain.
Okay, thank you. Wendy.
Sorry. Very quick question. I'm puzzled by the number, why we're selecting so many more people than there are slots that we even anticipate would be given to the GNSO. That seems to be giving a lot of discretion to the selectors, where I would think we would prefer to keep more control by selecting a pool that was only the same number as would actually get there, so we knew as a group that our selections would get in, not that only a few particular selections.
Now, Bill, do you want to respond first?
Groups.
Sure. Yeah. First of all, we don't know how many they'll select, which makes that a difficult calculation. But secondly, if you were to say, okay, the council's only going to put forward two names because those are the two names we desperately want to get in there, then you're going to turn this into a very politicized process, because we're going to have everybody feeling, you know, like they didn't get their candidate considered or whatever. Giannis and Peter know how to do this. They, I don't think it's that problematic. If each stakeholder group puts forward, you know, gets their own little piece of the turf to be able to put forward a name that they're satisfied with, and we have a provision for, you know, people who are not affiliated. I mean, we could have just gone with five rather than six, quite frankly. But either way, it seemed reasonable for them to maybe pick two out of six, those, assuming that those six would all be people that have significant backing within a rather diverse community.
And I would add to that, Wendy, that, and I'll let you come back, Bill. I would add to that that in the very short time frame we have for this first review team, you're assuming, or we would be assuming, if we only put forth one, as is currently proposed, that we could reach consensus in the GNSO in a very short period of time, and that may or may not be a fair assumption.
Right, that's what I was saying. It would have been a very political process to imagine that we were going to come up with one or two names within the council. I think we would have been endlessly voting, and everybody would have gone away a little bit unhappy. And bear in mind, Wendy, this is only an experimental first process, right? We're going to see how this one works. Then we're going to try to define the drafting team in April, a sort of more standing permanent process we can use for other review teams going forward based on the experience and lessons learned. If it turns out that doing it this way wasn't sensible, then the next time we'll do it more narrowly.
Okay.
I appreciate the work that's been done. I don't want to redo it. I just think that we're not depoliticizing the process. We're just moving the politics to a different level.
By the way, Wendy, and then I'll move on to Alan and then Tim. Glad to see you have connectivity, Tim. If we only did one or only did two and they don't endorse it and then have to come back to us, that's another issue we were thinking, especially on this first one where there is so little time to get it done. Alan, you're on.
Chuck. This is Stefan. Just to let you know that you still have a motion to do, and you're 3 minutes away from being out of time on this one.
Thank you, Stefan. Alan.
I won't use up much of the time. Part of what Bill suggested is that if you have someone that you think belongs to ALAC, you will try to hand them over to ALAC and see if ALAC takes them. I don't think we're going to have the time or the mechanism to address that. So I would suggest that if you put them into the unaffiliated, and because they are unaffiliated from the point of view of the council, and treat them accordingly. There are people who have applied to more than one group to endorse them. The other Christina asked raised the issue of what is the ALAC equivalent of the councils in the sporting organization. The answer is the ALAC. The overall supporting organization is equivalent to at large. That's it.
Thank you, Alan. Tim.
Thank you.
Just a quick question about the what happens to the applications that don't get endorsed. I'm not advocating one way or the other. Just curious if only the endorsed applications will be forwarded to Peter and Yandis, or if we'll be forwarding all of them with those that are endorsed indicated as such.
Bill, you want me to answer that?
We did not debate a particular approach to that, but a lot of people have raised questions about the wisdom of having a sort of standing pool names floating around, and whether it wouldn't be better to give them less and more focused information. So, Chuck, do you have a different concept about how that would
be? No, well, the information you just said is certainly accurate, but Tim, everybody has to apply via the ICANN process, so all of the applicants will be visible to the selectors, but there is a requirement that the GNSO endorse at least one, as it's worded right now. We're hoping for at least two candidates, and so we will only be submitting the ones that we endorse.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Now, let's, Bill, I think you want to go over the qualifications. Is that what's next?
Yes, just very quickly, because as Stefan notes, the time is running. We discussed some additional requirements that people wanted anyone who's applying for GNSO through GNSO to meet. They are in the document. You can see them. Some are just kind of basic editorial things that weren't specified in the ICANN call, like the full name and contact. A couple of them were points that Christina wanted to put in, and I think some of the other CSG people, about identifying any financial ownership or senior management interests of the applicant and whether they're representing any other party. Nobody had any problems with that. This is the operative point, we said a 2-3 paragraph statement about the applicant's knowledge of the GNSO community and its structure and operations, and any details of his or her participation therein. So we're trying to elicit from them, you know, how grounded are you in the work of the GNSO and able to evaluate it, since in particular policy development processes are one of the things to be considered in this first review. And in the event that an applicant has not been involved in the GNSO, we didn't want to preclude them, anybody from applying, a 2-3 paragraph description of his or her qualifications that would be of relevance to the accountability and transparency review team. So you could, for example, get some retired judge who's a specialist in accountability and transparency issues who hasn't ever worked in the GNSO environment, still might add value to a review team. We might want the option to be able to consider nominating them. So that was trying to take account of both the people we wanted to make sure were grounded and people who might not be grounded. And then the last point had to do with there's an operational point about how exactly these are submitted. But anyway, that's the main point. Does anybody have any issues about those additional qualifications?
And note that we're saying that the council could endorse up to 6. So it is feasible. I'm not sure how likely it is. Depends on the candidates, I guess. That a stakeholder group, for example, could decide not to endorse anybody because they don't think anybody's qualified, or that we might not fill one of the two open slots because we felt nobody was qualified. Again, I'm not suggesting that that is what will happen, but there is that flexibility to do less than 6.
Right. Okay, so that is the process document that is the subject of the motion. Now, there are issues about the motion's wording and the accompanying internal action plan document that have to do with the dates, which are unresolved. Chuck did a quick edit on the motion, and can we approve a motion with so many multiple choice dates in it? I don't know.
I think we're going to have to, as long as people agree to that, Bill, because Krista Spain wants a little more time on the deadline, and so there's a possibility it'll be a few days, one or two days beyond the 7th of March.
Okay. If people can look at the motion itself, the whereases are not so interesting, the resolves, the operative points here are that we ask for the evaluation team to be created today, and that's the last thing we'll do on this topic after we vote the motion, or I guess we have to do it before. The question is when stakeholder groups should be submitting their nominees to us, and when we would schedule a teleconference to do the voting. And I had suggested on the list that, on the assumption that the applicant date is going to be the 7th, that we might consider the 10th for when stakeholder groups have to nominate their people. That's the day after constituency day. And then you'd have a few days for the evaluation team to look at the applications. Then we could vote, say, on the 15th or 16th. And in the event that there's a problem with the diversity or whatever, we'd still have a day for the evaluation team to try to work something out before we have to submit on the 17th. So that was my suggested timeline, Chuck, but you've got more multiple choices in here. I don't know if you want to just do it this way. I'm indifferent.
Okay. Does anybody object to us moving to the motion right now? Then let's do that. By the way, the action plan that's referenced there, there's some date changes in that as well. But unless somebody really wants me to go over that, we'll move right to the motion itself. Now, so Bill kind of went over the motion, the resolutions in the motion. Does anybody want me to or want Bill to read the motion? Okay.
You mean from a technical standpoint, or it's
no,
there
just,
on the
just in case somebody didn't have connectivity or something to see it or something like that. I just wanted to ask that. No, the dates are somewhat flexible. Okay, at the latest, the earliest. There will be an announcement tomorrow that says that the application deadline will be extended at least until 7 March. It could be extended to the 8th of March or the 9th of March or the latest, I think, the 10th of March, in which case the evaluation team would not get the final applications until probably the day after, and they need some time to do their work. Okay, they're going to be busy for a few days, and it will be a few days. Then there's also the issue of the SGs submitting their endorsements, and so what I suggested in the edits that I sent around this morning on the motion that the SGs do that no later than the 14th of March. Bill just, I think, suggested a little earlier than that. It obviously depends on when the application period actually ends, so those are interdependent dates. I apologize that we don't have an exact date. We tried and failed. One of the problems right now is that Cheryl and Chris are not up in the middle of the night like Adrian and Rosemary and other people in the Asia Pacific thing, so they haven't responded to the latest exchange. So I think we do have to be flexible there on the motion. Any questions or comments on that? I don't see any hands up, and I'm not hearing anyone. I would like to take a roll call vote on the motion, with the understanding that the dates will be adjusted. But maybe before I do that, we need to talk about the what we want to do relative to the dates in relationship to each other. For example, I think it's fair to say that whatever date the application deadline is, that the reviews can start on the evaluation team, that their work can start, and that the SGs then will need some time. Bill, you suggested the 10th. Do you have a problem with giving the SGs until the 14th? That's a Sunday after the Nairobi meetings to submit their endorsements.
Well, the only question is whether you wanted the SGs to submit their endorsements before the evaluation team rendered an assessment. Because if it doesn't matter, then it doesn't matter.
Ideally, that would be nice. The problem of it is that would give the SGs so little time to do their thing and even less time then for the evaluation team to do their final review. I think in the longer-term process, that would be very good.
Yeah.
My concern is that the window's already so short for the evaluation team and the SGs to do their work, I don't know how we can do that.
I'm fine with giving them more time as long as a motion like this is technically kosher. We'll sort the dates once we find out from everybody else what our parameters are.
Anybody object to the change that I made to make the SGs, give the SGs until the 14th to submit their endorsements? That can be firm then in the motion. The part of the motion that's not firm is that the dates and I'm trying to find my motion again. Okay, so in 4B of the motion, it says all applications from volunteers requesting GNSO endorsement will be forwarded to them as soon as possible after the application period closes on. All we're leaving open there is whatever final date is determined by the selectors. Okay? I have it worded 7 March or 8 March, 9 March or 10 March. We could actually, if people are more comfortable, say the day after the application period closes. Okay? If there's no other discussion, let me get back over to the Adobe room. I don't see any hands. Let's take it. This motion was made by Bill and seconded by me. Glenn, would you please do a roll call vote? Am I still on?
Yeah, you are.
Okay.
Yep.
Rosemary, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
What do you vote, please?
Yes.
Wolf Ulrich Knobin?
Yes.
Caroline Greer?
Yes.
Mary Wong?
Yes.
Wendy Seltzer?
Yes.
Terry Davis is absent. Bill Drake?
Yes.
Mike Rodenbach said he would abstain. Are you still on the line, Mike? He's disconnected. Adrian Kinderis?
Yes.
Saeed Jamil?
Yes.
Stefan van Gelder?
Yes.
Rafik Damak?
Yes.
Christina Rosette?
Yes.
Deborah Hughes?
Yes.
Edmund Chun?
Yes.
David Taylor?
Yes.
Tim Ruiz?
Yes.
Jamie Wagner?
Yes.
Chuck Gomes?
Yes.
Olga Cavelli?
Yes.
There is 1 vote, 6 votes out of 7 for the contracted party house. Yes. And 12 votes out of 13 for the non-contracted party house. Yes. And there's 1 abstention from Mike Rodenbach. And 1 person did not vote in the contracted party house. That was Terry Davis. I have asked Mike to send his reason for abstention as soon as possible.
Thank you, Glenn. So the motion passes. The next step then is to form an evaluation team, and I had asked each of you to consult with your stakeholder group, and the NCAs have consulted, I know. I don't know why we're getting an echo now. And I certainly can't mute my phone. That sounds better. If people have done that, I'll just kick that off. Caroline Greer was selected by the registry stakeholder group to represent us on the evaluation team. And Olga, I think it's correct that the NCA selected you, is that right?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I was on mute because there is some problem in my line. Yeah, we discussed that with Terry and with Andre, and that's me.
Thank you very much. On the contracted house, did the registrar select someone?
Hello? Yes, the registrar selected me.
Thank you, Stefan.
That was Adrian Kinder.
Oh, that was Adrian. I'm sorry.
Wow, I'm sounding like Stefan at this hour.
At 3 o'clock in the morning, you've got a better excuse than I do. So, all right, so it's Adrian, okay. And then let's go to the non-contract party's house. Did the non-commercial stakeholder group select someone?
Yeah, that would be me.
Okay, good. And that was Bill, right?
Yeah.
Okay, got that one right.
Sorry.
That's okay. Then we'll go to the commercial stakeholder group.
Wolf Ulrich, I think that's you, yeah?
I think so. Thank you.
Okay, all right. So it's Wolf. Thank you, everyone, for that part. And the policy support person for that evaluation team will be who?
Sorry, just getting off mute. That's Margie.
Okay, very good. I think we've got that covered, and I'm sorry to take so long on this thing. As Bill noted, the drafting team will continue its work, probably picking it up as soon as this process is over so that we can learn from it and start developing a longer-term process that probably all of us will be much happier with and will be proposed to the council, the target being April. Sorry for going over 15 minutes, I think, on this agenda item. Let's quickly move then to item 5. And again, thanks for all your patience on the fluidity of this issue. Going to item 5, the Nairobi meeting planning, I do want to inform the council that I will not be allowed by my company to attend the meetings in Nairobi live, so I will be participating remotely. And Stefan and Olga and I have talked about that, and they will be assuming the live meeting leadership roles that are needed there and have divvied that up accordingly. I apologize for that. That was beyond my control. The schedule has been posted. There's a link there. I would like Stefan to provide a quick overview of the schedule, and then we'll have discussion on that.
Thanks, Chuck. I'll be very quick. The schedule has been updated, as you said, to reflect the various meetings where either myself or Olga will chair, and the important points maybe for council to note there are that I will chair the council meeting on the Wednesday, Olga will chair the follow-up on the Thursday, and Olga will be giving, if she can, the SO chair report to the board on the Friday. That is still actually, we're still working on that a little bit, but that's the way it's looking at the moment. On the schedule itself, I won't go into any detail. It's been sent to the list. There are certain meetings that are still being moved around because of people not going to Nairobi. I'm thinking specifically of the meetings on the Sunday, 7th of March, where the chairs of some of those groups aren't going to be there, and so we have been organizing those meetings so that other people can take over their role.
any questions, I'll be happy to answer, but I'll stop there for now.
And so note that some of the meetings are in flux as well because of the issues with regard to the Nairobi attendance. In particular, the registry's stakeholder group will not be holding an in-person meeting in Nairobi. There will be a few people there from that, but the stakeholder group may be holding a meeting elsewhere. The details are being worked on that. Many will still be participating remotely. Does anyone else have an announcement in that regard with any changes to the agenda?
I have a question, though, Chuck.
Go ahead, Christina.
Given how many of us are going to be participating remotely for the formal council meeting, and I think we're up to six, although I understand that could go up, would it be possible to try and figure out as soon as possible what it is we're actually going to vote on and try and schedule those votes at a time that is going to be least inconvenient for the greatest number of people participating remotely?
Good suggestion. I'll work with Adrian and Olga, and we'll look at the agenda and deal with that. Thanks a lot. That's an excellent suggestion.
Thanks, Chuck.
Chuck, it's Liz.
Yes, Liz.
I just wanted to let you know and others that Nick Ashton Hart, who's in charge of the public and remote participation, is also on the line, and so he could give an overview of what's planned there, and people could feel free to ask him questions as well at the appropriate time.
Okay, now you're talking about a plan for remote participation, Liz?
Yes.
Okay, and I think most of us have seen announcements that a lot of efforts are going on in that regard, and in fact, I think the board has a special call, I don't know if it's today or tomorrow, lost track, a special call with regard to that topic. Nick, do you have anything to add?
To myself, hello to everyone. There's probably not a great deal that I wouldn't wish to waste your time by reiterating anything that you see that is in writing. I just wanted to say that it will be possible, at your option, Chuck, if you wish, to be seen. Depending on the time of day when you're remotely participating, you may not wish to be seen, but it will be possible for certain presenters and for ACNSO chairs who are not in Nairobi to be visible on Skype in the room in the same way that Rita Rodan is often visible during board meetings. You obviously don't have to do that. There will be two-way audio for you, Chuck, and for the other counselors, of course, aside from all the other remote participation services that are available. So,
thank you, Nick. That is helpful information. Now, is the video conferencing only available via Skype?
That's what we have had very good experience with presenters working via Skype remotely.
That's fine. I just wanted to clarify that so that we, you know, in terms of working that out and understanding the parameters. Okay. Thank you very much, Nick. I also saw Mary in the queue.
Actually, no. My question was about remote participation. I think Nick answered quite a lot of that. Thanks.
Thanks, Mary. And thanks, Nick, for that. We now go to the GAC GNSO meeting in Nairobi, and this is another topic that's been in flux the last few days, and in fact today as well. I'm going to ask now: do we have Bill's latest version of the document that the drafting team prepared available on the Adobe site and the wiki?
That looks like it, Chuck. It's Rosemary.
Okay.
That is not, Chuck, that's not the full document. I put this text into Rosemary's document with the background stuff and sent that to the list about an hour before the meeting, I think.
Okay, Marika, Marika just, I think, updated the site. Is that correct, Marika?
What she's showing?
Is this the right one, Bill?
Well,
the one that's up now?
I mean, these are the these are the operative parts. This is the part that we have to decide, is it okay? But Rosemary did a longer document that has some background material attached as well, in which this text is now embedded.
Okay, so tell me...
This is fine for now, Marika. There's a lot of excellent background material that Rosemary added to the full document, but that's for our internal uses, so that everyone on the council has background information, especially for those who might be newer to ICANN and the GAC and so forth. So please, make yourself inform yourself about the background information, because good work went into that, and it is very helpful. Our focus today is on this draft plan, and I'll let Rosemary talk about that.
Okay, Chuck, and it would be helpful to me, Bill, if you don't mind jumping in. Now I've lost the document completely.
It'll come back. I think she's doing an update probably.
So perhaps if I just do an overview, the first page or so of the document is a suggested outline for the actual meeting that would take place between the GAC and the GSO in Nairobi. When you have a chance to look at the rest of the material, you'll see, as Chuck and Bill have said, some background that I put in just to position the GAC for everybody and to give an outline from their own communications about various issues and concerns that they have. I think, Chuck, possibly the best use of our time at the moment is to just go through the issues.
Yes.
We are suggesting in the meeting that there would be time to discuss three issues, new GTLD implementation and express interest process, the affirmation of commitments, and the third one is just off screen at the moment, which is the, I think, the public role. Is it, Bill, if you could just...
No, it's the larger international context of what governments are up to.
Yes, exactly, and I thought that was a terrific addition. So do we just want to go through the issues, Chuck, and... see if people are happy with the questions.
Yes, because this has happened so late, I think we do need to go through it in a little bit of detail, but quickly. I do want to say that what the outcome we need from this discussion right here, right now, today, is that is agreement from the council that I can submit this proposal to Yiannis after this meeting, for him to either agree or change it. Obviously, we need to jointly agree on the agenda. It's a lot for an hour, so we need to be aware of that, and that's all we have is an hour with GAC, and that doesn't vary. At least historically, it has not. So if you can go through each of the three items and the questions or comments that are there, Rosemary, that would be very helpful.
Okay, well, if we start with some new GTLD implementation and expression of interest, the way we see the process working is that we've got a two-phase process for each topic, and the first phase is some clarification questions from us to the GAC, and then the second phase is vice versa, and then we would have some open discussion, the objective being to clarify positions and to try to identify where there might be shared views. The first one, we've got four questions going firstly to concerns about geographic and intellectual property protections. The next one about the GAC proposal for additional studies and the effect of that. The third about GAC's concern about a single fee structure. And the fourth about the suitability and timeframe of the EOI model. Which
Chuck, do you want to take on a discussion on this point now before we go to the next one?
That's not a bad idea. Let's go through all of it because one of the decisions we have to make is, do we want all three areas? Do we want all the questions? And it's probably easier to deal with that once we've gone through the whole thing.
Okie doke, fine. So the next one is about the affirmation of commitments. And again, just very briefly, the first topic is that rather tricky one of defining public interest, and we're seeking some clarification, I think, from GAC members on how they interpret public interest. The second point is suggestions about how ICANN's various components, such as ourselves, the GNSO, could more effectively embody public interest standards in what we're doing.
Farika, can you scroll down the document a little bit?
People should be able to
respond
individually.
We can each do that ourselves. I always forget that.
Correct.
That's my mistake. Thank you.
Okay. And the third is any thoughts or expectations that GAC might have about our policy development process and any recommendations that may be advanced by the affirmation of commitments, accountability and transparency review team. Then the third issue is this one of ICANN in the wider environment. And we're seeking firstly for GAC members to explain the relationship to ICANN in general in the context of the number of intergovernmental discussions going on and the public policy principles that are relevant. And the second point here is to ask GAC to help us understand some of the policy proposals that have been advanced in the ITU, and here I am not on solid ground. So subject matter experts will have to interpret this point. But there are some suggestions in there about registry services, CCTLD policies, IDN, and so on.
Bill or Wolf, do you want to add anything on these three areas? Go ahead, Bill.
Well, first of all, just to be clear, obviously if you look at this, it's a whole lot of stuff and you're not going to do it in an hour. We didn't anticipate that we would. The idea was to lay out a menu of possible topics that we could sort of put forward for people to consider addressing. It being understood, obviously, if we have 20 minutes to talk about new GTLDs, maybe only one or two of these might be addressed. I don't think whether you want to do it sequentially or not, with us questioning the GNSO, us questioning the GAC, and then questioning us. That's not what we've done before, but we could do it that way. Mm-hmm. As far as any substantive clarification, certainly I can do that. But the main point is, do we want to do two chunks that they asked for, or maybe have this third chunk? And the third chunk was really intended to try to get governments to speak a little bit more openly about the fact that while we're having all these lovely discussions here within ICANN, they are elsewhere taking all kinds of actions intended to impact ICANN and the environment within which it operates, and that's never addressed.
Bill, you're planning on being there in person, is that right?
Sure.
Right.
Okay, good. So you can help on the third one if we do that. Adrian, which of you, Olga, or yourself are going to fulfill my role in the GAC GNSO meeting?
I think it's me.
All right. Thank you, Olga.
And one comment. I'm available on Friday for giving the report to the board.
You are available?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Christina, you're in the queue.
First off, I just wanted to thank the group that works on this. I think this is a really great idea to have this done so thoroughly so far in advance. I do have one kind of general question and one specific question. With regard to the specific question, and I guess it's on the other document, I just don't know if – do we know if the GAC members overlap enough with representatives in the ITU such that they could actually answer the question we've got posed in 3A, little double I, about you know, the proposals advanced in ITU, only because if we're not certain of that, I would hate to put them in a spot where it looks like they don't know.
I think I can address that. I actually looked at, because Rosemary asked me this too, and I actually looked and compared the list of GAC members and attendees with, for example, the people who go to ITU council meetings. There is a significant enough chunk of them. I mean, obviously, only a couple of them can actually respond to the point. And clearly, there are several people there who work in both environments. And secondly, if they don't work necessarily in the ITU, they're usually going to be in a ministry that does work in the ITU. And you know, it's reasonable to ask a government, you know, is there any coherence to what you're doing implicitly?
As long as we do it politely. The other question I have is, I think I'd raised this in our last call. Do we know for sure that there will be remote participation available for counselors during this meeting?
Glenn? Is Glenn on the call still?
This is Denise. The plan is to have some level of remote participation for every scheduled meeting. So Nick Ashton Hart can email the council list on that specific meeting to give you the details. Does that work?
That's good. Thank you, Denise.
I appreciate that very much.
I'll probably also on my message to Giannis make sure that they're okay with that in this particular session. So I'll do that. Thank you. Good question, Christina. All right. Bill did a good job of suggesting the alternatives here. We can include I can propose all three topics and all of the questions to Giannis, and as kind of a menu. They obviously suggested topics 1 and 2 without the detail. Okay. We are adding the third topic. Any discussion on that? You know, in other words, the question is, should I send all of this to Giannis as a menu of options and ask him to respond with what they would like to do? Is that okay? Anybody object to that? And if so, what would you like eliminated? Hearing no one, and I think, Christina, your hand's up from before. Is that right?
Yes, sorry.
Okay. Did I hear someone else? Okay. Everybody's okay with that, and so I will send this information to Giannis and say, hey, we've done a little preparatory work on this, and please respond. We understand that it's quite likely not possible to cover all of this. If you have some recommendations in that regard, please let me know so that we can finalize this in advance of the meeting. What we need to also go over here are the and I'm trying to see what happened to the suggested operating procedures. I don't see those on here. That got eliminated. I was going to send that to Giannis as well in terms of seating, and we don't need to worry about minutes, but what happened to that piece of this document?
I think in the to-ings and fro-ings, we just lost that piece. If I just quickly try to find it.
Yeah, I think when I inserted the discussion topics, I might have accidentally that was the bit that just said the co-chairs are co-chairing and things like that, right?
There was something about seating that I can just talk about those with Giannis, and I'm okay with that. What else was there, Rosemary? There was the seating issue.
There was the chairing issue, the seating issue, the meeting being open, and time permitting comments from community members.
Do we want to include that? I mean, realistically, it's going to be tough, I think, to get comments from community members. But I'm okay leaving that in if people want me to. Thoughts?
I only put those things in as a bit of a straw poll, Chuck. So if you think realistically we're not going to get to it, then maybe it's better not to have the expectation amongst some people that there will be that time.
I tend to think that. Does anybody disagree?
No.
Okay. All right, so I'll do that. Here's what I will do. I will raise the seating issue in terms of trying as much as possible to get allow counselors to sit at the main table where there's microphones without disrupting GAC members excessively, and then I will mention that Olga will be filling in for me as chair in that meeting. Is that okay?
Yep.
All right. I think we've covered that enough. Let's move on then to the CCNSO GNSO lunch meeting on Monday. And refresh my memory, who's taking the lead on this, Stefan or Olga?
I don't recall. Maybe Stefan.
No, this is Olga again.
Olga? Okay, so Olga, you've got that one. And,
we're both doing it. But,
yeah, you're both going to be there, but I'll say Olga will take the lead. I'll put both, but Olga's taking the lead. And I don't know, unless anybody has any concerns, the proposed topics are the affirmation of commitments as a general topic to talk about. I think the CCNSO and the GNSO both have concerns about that way that's coming about, and just be kind of an open discussion in that regard. And either side may want to know a little bit more about the other's processes for this, for endorsing candidates for this first review. There's also some selected topics from the JIG. Edmund, could you? Which topics on the JIG would be most appropriate for possible discussion in this joint meeting?
Well, perhaps one of the things we can try to get a sense is there. I mentioned four items that we identified, and one of which is somewhat still being discussed. So I guess we can go through the four items that we feel were items of common interest, and perhaps talk a little bit more about the fourth one, whether we think it is an item of common interest. By the way, I did send out a very late update, and we are planning to have a first meeting of the JIG in Nairobi. So I'm not sure whether it will be before or after the lunch.
Edmund, rather than just going over the four topics, is there one or two of them that would be most helpful in this joint meeting to have some discussion? Because everybody that's in this meeting won't be in the JIG meeting.
It seems like out of the four, three of them are quite comfortably considered a matter of joint interest. Perhaps we can spend a little bit more time on the fourth one, which is what is to be requested by ICANN and eventually into the IANA database. That seems to be one item that is outstanding, whether that should be something of common interest or not.
Edmund, could I ask you to prepare a little introduction of that topic that could be used in that meeting to kick off discussion?
Sure.
Yeah, and the sooner you can get that to me, the better, and that'll facilitate that one. With regard to the other topics, do people in the council, would you like to have an update of the IDN CCTLD fast track? Because obviously the CCNSO folks aren't going to need that. I don't think. But so we would only, I would only suggest that topic if there is interest on the part of the GNSO in that regard. Anybody want that topic?
Chuck, just to let you know that you're 10 minutes over time on this.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks, Stefan. And nobody is saying, so I will suggest, does anybody have any other topics for that meeting? Okay. Then I will suggest to Chris that we talk about the affirmation of commitments, any issues of interest between the two groups there, and that we talk about the one topic from the JIG, and Chris is aware of that one already, so we can all do that. Then the possible topics for the board, staff, GNSO dinner meeting, one of the I think the only topic, correct me if I'm wrong, that has been suggested is the ongoing new GTLD delays. So one of the topics in the way Aubrey did this, which I think worked pretty well, she had a primary topic over the main part of the dinner and then a dessert topic that would be discussed at each table. Is anybody opposed to the issue of ongoing new GTLD delays being discussed as one of the topics? Not hearing anyone. Does anyone have an additional topic? Or should you, do you want me to have the freedom to just, and Olga and Stefan to suggest an additional topic? By the way, with new TLDs, are there any particular of the new excerpts that were published on Monday that people would like to add in the mix there? Okay. All right. Well, then, Stefan and Olga, I think we have some freedom there to finalize that, and we should get that done so that we can suggest the topics to the board and staff.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'll put it on the list, but I do have questions. Anyway, I'll put it on the list because I know we're over time.
If you want to just say it right now, that's fine.
Well, I just am a little concerned about having that be the primary board topic, given that of the counselors who are not attending, a number of them are from the group that that the overarching issues have to be resolved and that ICANN has not yet really done that. So, you know, y'all are going to have plenty of opportunity to beat up on us as it is, given that we're not going to be there. And I just think that frankly, you know, skewing the conversation like this is frankly unfair.
How about if we call this closure of the new GTLD process? And that doesn't totally avoid your problem, but I think it's less one-directional in terms of issues there.
That's fine.
Okay, and if you want to send more to the list, please do so.
Can I just make a comment on that?
Yes, please.
Sorry. I just want to react to what Christina said, because I think it's equally unfair for us to be asked to stifle what we're doing, those people that are going, because some people are not.
Okay. Thank you, Stefan. Let's go on. And now, the council meeting agenda for the 10th has been posted. There will probably be some revisions based on all that's going on, and with Christina's suggestion to try and adjust some of the timing, I will take a look at that and work with Olga and Stefan to work on that. Any questions or comments on the agenda that's been posted? Okay. Moving on to item 6, status updates. Again, most chairs of working groups, working teams, et cetera, and even Denise sent status updates. And does anybody have any questions? I'm going to give Denise a chance to talk about anything maybe that she wants to highlight from the board meeting update that she sent today. But outside of that, are there any questions or comments on any of those updates that were submitted? Okay. Let me then turn to Denise. And did David join us? Did David Olive join the call?
Yes.
I'm here.
Thank you, David. I want to welcome David to the call. I'm sure you've been on for most of the call. But welcome to this call. I think everyone knows that David will be Denise's replacement, and in fact started on Monday, the 15th. And Denise also started her new position, but she is cooperating fully in terms of help with transition and so forth. So welcome on board, David. And some of us will get a chance to meet you in person in Nairobi. Unfortunately, I won't, but I look forward to doing that in the future. So welcome on board. Denise, I want to turn it over to you. Is there anything we don't have time to go through the your full status update on the board meeting, and I think all of us have seen that and have seen the preliminary notes. But is there anything out of that 4 February board meeting that you would like to talk about and highlight?
It was such a full board agenda on so many important issues. You could have a separate council call just discussing all of them. I think it might be better to just respond to any questions if council members have particular questions about any of the items listed on that on the board list. I would just like to take this opportunity to call the council's attention to the fact that the budget cycle has started. The board expects to post a final strategic plan any day, and the operating plan and budget process has started. A first draft has been posted, and so constituencies, stakeholder groups, and council members will are encouraged to consider what ICANN's funding priorities should be next year and how to allocate their resources, and this will be done within the context of a relatively flat budget of no increases. Happy to answer any questions about the list of items that that the board covered at its last meeting, and Kurt Pritz, I believe, is also on the call.
Glad to have you on the call, Kurt. Denise, before I open it up to questions, do you have anything? Can you provide any information about the board is having a special call, I think, tomorrow with regard to remote participation and so forth? Anything to add on that?
It's actually later today in the Pacific time zone, but I really have nothing further beyond what Bruce Tonkin posted to the council list.
Any questions of Denise or Kurt? Christina, is your hand up for that?
It is.
Okay, go ahead.
Denise, I understand from the meeting summary, which was put up very quickly, and I do appreciate that, but I do understand from that summary that a number of the board members and liaisons recuse themselves from the discussion on vertical integration due to conflicts of interest. The summary doesn't identify who those people were, but if it had been a public meeting, we would all know. So I guess my question is, who recused themselves?
Is it correct, Denise, that they recused themselves or they were asked to recuse themselves?
I would love to hand this question over to Kurt if he's still on the phone. I actually need to get some guidance on how the board actually handled this. And so if Kurt's not on the line, I'll confer with him and John Jeffrey, general counsel, who actually handled this aspect of the meeting, and tell you precisely what we're able to tell you. I just need some guidance on that.
Okay, that's fine. Kurt, are you on?
This is Kurt. I can tell you that the board members were asked to identify if they had conflicts or not. That's how the discussion started. So they were asked to identify that.
And so then if they said they had conflicts, they were asked to leave?
I don't want to kick this around either because it's a legalistic discussion and not a substantive one, but I think, you know, there's different levels of conflict and different levels of handling it. So I think, you know, the board members were given discretion how to handle it.
My information is third or fourth hand, so I may be way off base, but it sounded to me like it was handled differently than it's ever been handled before, and some clarity on how that was handled would be helpful to the council list. I was surprised that they were asked to leave the meeting, and even on the informational parts, I understand in terms of influencing a decision or on a vote, but it seemed like a, a new level of recusal that was added, and so any clarity you could provide would be very helpful. Let's move on then to item 7 under other business. Margie, if you could be very brief on the two items here in terms of the postings, the STI and other excerpts, I would appreciate that.
Sure, and actually, since Kurt's on the line, perhaps Kurt can give an overview of the documents, and we'll certainly have sessions in Nairobi to talk in more length on these issues, because it was really difficult to cover this in a few minutes. Kurt, why don't I hand it to you?
Yeah, if you look on the announcement page, you know, we're always struggling with how to present this material most clearly. So we broke it pretty much into two families. One are a set of reports that essentially tell the reader how this issue would appear in the guidebook. So sort of an excerpt and sort of not. And because it gives, half explanatory memo, because it gives the thinking behind that. And then that's one set of documents. And then the set below is the public comment summaries and analyses that we traditionally do. And so if we talk about the topic papers, for trademark protections, there's a set of three papers, one for URS, one for Trademark Clearinghouse, one for post-delegation dispute resolution. Obviously, the first to mirror the output of the STI work, we took into account, and you'll read below in the comment summaries, we also took into account public comment, and so in certain cases, those models are tweaked slightly, but the counselors will see, essentially the same words that were in the STI report will appear in the guidebook. So we're pretty, as an editorial note, we're pretty darn excited because we think we're getting to a close on having real trademark protections in a form in the guidebook that, where we have consensus. There's sort of a related paper, a post-delegation dispute model for community PLDs, and so that's group of those. Then there's a couple papers on IDN, a lifting of the restriction on three characters for IDNs under certain circumstances, and so that model is proposed, and after discussion we hope to finalize that. And then an IDN variance, IDN variant management, it projects the path forward. So there's an interim solution for the guidebook as, the community continues to search for a solution to the variant management issue. And then finally, there's some memos, one about benchmarking of registry operations where a number of GTLD and CCTLD registries took part in a benchmarking exercise. So you might find that interesting. And then there's been a lot of discussion about the proposed registry agreement, and in particular the proposal for how to amend that agreement. And we think that discussion needs to be broadened. And so there's a proposal from the GTLD registry constituency in that about how that should be handled, and some guidance around how to read that and consider the issue. So all those documents are posted for public comment. And then below that we have the public comment summaries, so we don't post those for comment because, if we started getting comment on comment, we'd be getting really too eye-cannish, right? It's traditional, although a lot. There's the comment summary on version 3 of the guidebook. So that runs about 110 pages. There's the summary and analysis of the STI report. And so that runs, I think, 70 pages or so. Between those two documents, that's 100,000 words right there. So there's a lot of comment and there's a lot of analysis. And again, really tried to show that, a lot of balancing and thought went into those things. We also closed public comment sessions on there was a summary of earlier comments on proposed rights protection mechanisms. And then there's also a public comment analysis on the expressions of interest and pre-registrations, and then we also closed the forum on the report on the three character requirement barrier management of IDN. So we have those things.
Thanks, Kurt. I know we're out of time. Just a quick comment, and if somebody else, I see there's a couple of people in queue. I went through the EOI summary and analysis. It was one of the most thorough documents in that regard that I've ever seen, so I compliment you on that, even if I do disagree with a couple of the conclusions in the analysis, but I'll comment on those separately. And I think with regard to the rollout of new GTLDs, I have some concerns with regard to the GNSO recommendations regarding the communications period and the direction that that is being proposed. But I will again take those offline, and maybe just some clarity is all that's needed in that regard. I'll follow up on that. Let me quickly turn it over and be extremely brief, please, Alan.
Yeah, I may have missed it because there's a lot of documents and I haven't read them all. But if there isn't one, it would be useful to have an explicit statement of what was implemented in the URS and Trademark Clearinghouse that was different from the STI report, as opposed to all of us trying to go through and tick off things one by one.
Well, Alan, the quickest way to see that is the red line. You're comparing it to the
STI, to the original draft document.
Gotcha. Yeah. By the way, the red lines, if you have been following the process, are a quicker way to look at these things. Yeah, good question. So if something could be done in that regard, that would be excellent, Kurt. Tim.
Yeah, I was wondering how much longer it might be before we see an agenda for the board meeting. And I think, at least for me, the most important aspect of that is the actions that the board may be taking or actually decisions that they may be making.
Good question. That's always a concern. It would be nice to see that a lot earlier in the process. So anything the staff can do to explore that issue. There's been a good job of requiring advance notice. In fact, how is it that the board meeting agenda doesn't come under their own policy for public posting of agendas before, 15 working days before? You don't need to answer that now, but I think that's a legitimate question and related to what Tim is saying. Christina.
I lowered my hands.
I didn't look up. Thanks. Margie.
I just wanted to comment on Alan's question. We did an analysis of the STI public comment, and there's a separate document for that. And at the end of each section, we clarified what we changed from the STI report. So it's in the public comment summary, not in the red line. And we took the approach of minimizing the amount of changes from the STI report. So you'll see it's a fairly short list, and the explanation for why it was done that way is included in the public summary.
Okay, so you're saying it was all accepted other than things that were changed due to public comments?
Yeah, that's okay. Right. It's in the summary section, an explanation on areas where we did some clarification and areas where we changes as a result of public comments.
Okay, it wasn't clear that there were no changes due to staff or other input. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Alan, and thank you, Kurt, and the discussion on this. Very quickly, going to item 8, the project list is available there. Does anybody have any questions on any of the projects on that list before we adjourn? All right, I apologize for going over, but I'm very pleased that we made it through this agenda with just about 5 minutes extra. So thank you very much. We have a lot to do between now and the Nairobi meetings, and many of us will be calling in remotely for many of those meetings. So let's continue to have plenty of discussion on our council list. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks.